Have you ever wondered how drones can help to develop climate-resilient agriculture? Do you know how remote sensors can help to protect rainforests? Or have you ever considered hiring a graphic designer online from Kenya? Welcome to Exploring Digital Spheres. This season is all about digital developments around the world. Follow our research team as they travel to five different countries to talk to experts from civil society, academia, and the private sector. We will address issues relating to digitalization, sustainability, the future of entrepreneurship and work around the globe. This episode brings us to Nairobi, Kenya, an East African country at the border of the Indian Ocean. My name is Marie Blümel. I'm a researcher at the HIC and the team lead for this part of our project, Set to the African Continent. I will guide you through this episode. With me on this 11-day adventure are my colleagues Moritz Timm, also researcher, and Fabian Stefani, affiliate researcher at the HIC, and departmental research lecturer at the Oxford Internet Institute and academic lead of the activities in Kenya. As part of the SET project, we have already conducted various scientific transfer activities in Africa. After Benin and Ghana, we are now here in Nairobi, the country's vibrant capital and largest city. With more than 47 million inhabitants, Kenya is the largest economy in East Africa, and one of the economically leading states in the continent. This has been promoted by a strong private sector, investments in infrastructure, a growing middle class, and a relatively stable political system. Besides, this trip is also one to an African country that impressively reflects the growing relevance of global digital labor markets and online-mediated work, so-called gig work. They are one example of the rising importance of the platform economy globally. And Kenya is a large online gig work destination. For writing and translation gigs, Kenya has one of the largest online workforces worldwide. But what exactly brought us here? In collaboration with the Digital Transformation Center, short DTC, Kenya by Gesellschaft für Internationale Zusammenarbeit, GIZ, and its local partners, we jointly agreed on exploring and discussing pathways towards a fairer online platform economy in Kenya. From this arose our main research question: how can we make online gig work more sustainable? To discuss these highly relevant topics together with local experts and key stakeholders, we co-jointly organized a multi-stakeholder dialogue and a public panel discussion on the 9th of November in Nairobi. Further, our colleagues Kutuma Wakunuma and Tom Kwanya have studied the livelihood of Kenyan gig workers and perks and perils of the gig economy within an extensive study, which they presented during the event in Nairobi. But let us take one step back. What are online labor markets?
These are platforms on which digital services are delivered around the world. They are marketplaces like Amazon, but for services. For example, if you are a shop owner in London, you could find a graphic designer sketching your new company logo in Nairobi, or an accountant brushing up your balance sheets from Bangalore. Essentially, on platforms like Upwork or Fiverr, you can find little projects, so-called gigs, on all sorts of work that can be performed via the internet. Over the last decade, the online labor, or online gig economy, has been growing steadily, now involving millions of freelancers in writing, design, translation, or software gigs around the world. Much of the online gigs are performed by workers in South Asia, in countries like India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, or the Philippines, where living costs are relatively low. But also places like Kenya have become hotspots for online mediated work. Here, gigs in academic writing are particularly popular. In fact, it turns out that quite some papers of graduate students or even researchers based in the UK or the US, at least in part, might have been written by freelancers from Kenya. While these platforms offer novel economic opportunities for flexible income for freelancers and global outsourcing and offshoring options for firms, they are also often associated with precarious conditions of repetitive work and little social security for many gig workers. This double-edged sword of online work is particularly sharp on both ends in economically developing regions of the global south, where conventional economic opportunities are limited, local wages are low, and labor markets are fairly unregulated. But how to make this digital transformation of work more sustainable for workers and firms? With our partners in Kenya, like the GIZ Digital Transformation Center, we discuss common experiences and possible solutions towards a fairer online gig economy. Prior to our stakeholder meeting in Nairobi, we had the opportunity to speak with Tom Kwanya and Teresius Bundi, two Kenyan gig work researchers, about academic writing gigs and the state of the online labor market in Kenya.
It's a great pleasure to have Professor Tom Kwanya and Teresius Bundi here in Nairobi. And we're talking about online labor markets and how to move to a more sustainable online gig economy. And I would love to actually continue the conversation where we just chatted on before, which is that for some interesting reason, Kenya is becoming a very, very big market. There are a lot of workers, online workers in Kenya, that do writing, that do academic writing for people, for example, writing a thesis or writing a paper somewhere in the UK or somewhere in the United States. Yeah. This is work is mediated via platforms. Yeah. And It's called even, it even received a name, right? It's called Shadow Scholars.
Yeah, the hotbed of Shadow Scholars.
The hotbed of Shadow Scholars, yeah. We've been wondering, you know, how big is this phenomenon actually? Mm. I mean, you probably personally and professionally heard of, you've been in contact with people working online freelancers. Do you know any people personally who've been doing some Shadow Scholar work?
Yeah. Sure, I know a number of people who are actually doing Shadow Scholar work. And it's a huge industry here in Kenya. It's interesting. It's very interesting that you asked, why Kenya? You know, there are many other countries,
exactly.
But why is Kenya the hotbed of academic writing in Kenya, in the world? And I think there are many factors that, you know, that you could look at that would contribute to Kenya being the hotbed of academic writing. One is the rate of unemployment here in Kenya.
Yeah.
You find that we have graduates who have gone through the 844 system. They have graduated. They have gone through the university. But then, at the end of the day, they don't have employment opportunity.
Yeah.
So once they realize this opportunity to work online, then they find it as an alternative means of employment. So it's kind of an alternative means of employment among the academic writers in Kenya. The other factor that I would maybe look at is Kenya being a very good English speaker nation. So majority of the, you know, online workers who are working in Kenya have that grasp for the English language. So it resonates well with the clients who would be otherwise students in the United Kingdom or Australia or the United States.
So English language and the lack of economic opportunities outside of the online gig economy.
That's true. Yeah.
That's probably something that you see in your research and the studies too, Tom, right?
It's true, yeah. And also besides that, it's also level of literacy.
Yeah.
As it said, most of those people are either university students or have graduated.
Yeah.
And so you find that they are able to grasp the issues, the concepts that are being, you know, that require their work, whether it's research or essays, whatever it is. So there's quite a huge literate population out there that as it says, you know, are not in gainful employment.
Yeah.
But apart from that, Kenyans are also quite adventurous. Quite adventurous, and this resonates even, you know, it's reflected outside even gig work itself. out here, they'll be very creative at how to make money. And I think this is just one of the ways that they're able to make, I don't want to call it easy money, but money which is, an opportunity to make more money.
Yeah,
that's what I would say.
So if you hesitate to say easy money, why could it be difficult money?
It's difficult money in the sense that, of course, they have to apply themselves.
Yeah.
But easy in the sense that it's not physical.
Yeah.
It is actually mental.
You can do it from home.
You can do it from home.
You don't have to leave your house.
You don't have to leave your home. And again, the digital infrastructure in Kenya, I think, as in sub-Saharan Africa, has really improved.
Yeah.
So, getting data or connectivity is relatively low cost, I would say. Highly affordable.
So do people then usually, from your experience, is it for most workers, is it a side gig or is it really the substantial part of their income that they generate from online work?
Actually, from the data that we got from our research is that not academic writing, maybe they could be doing it as full-time, that is the only source of income that they're having. But for the other gigs, like say rideshare and all, it's the only thing they're doing. It's the main source of their income. But for academic writing, they could do it alongside other things. I know one of my PhD students, for instance, is studying and on academic writing. That's how he's paying his fee.
So because for students, I imagine, depending on your situation in life, the money that you could make with these gigs, it can be substantial, right? What do you really say?
Yeah, it can be substantial. The money that you make as a student working on these gigs can really be substantial, especially if you are working directly with a client, for example, or even when you have a very high-paying platform. But I think the academic writers or the gig workers who do gig work while still students, while still in school, do it to supplement, to supplement the income or some of the funds they get from their parents. Yeah, this, they would do it as well to supplement the fee, for example, that they would need to pay for the university, or even for their own upkeep. Yeah, and it's not easy. It's not easy, compared to other professions. You'd say you don't have to go through traffic, or you don't have to really have an investment of any kind.
Yes.
But the amount of effort that you have to put in, for you to get that dollar is also substantial, and that's another factor that you could also we could also look at, because you realize that the gig workers are working in a different time zone with the clients, so they have to really spend long hours. They have to stay awake even at night for them to complete a gig, and these platforms also come with penalties. A small mistake will you get penalized, and you might not even get paid.
Yeah,
so really a lot of hard work.
The reputation, I reckon, that people have on these platforms. That's a true value for them, right? That's something that they can really rely on.
Yes.
And so, but are there cases you could report of where this has not worked for the workers, or where they lost their reputation and therefore they also kind of lost their future gigs, their track on the market?
Yeah. The good thing with the platform, they also have a rating system.
Yeah.
So in case you ruin your reputation with the client, automatically you ruin your career in the gig work, because platforms by design are, come with star ratings and feedback system from the clients. So as gig workers in Kenya, you are striving to really wow the client.
Yes.
You want to go the extra mile to make the client feel, you deliver the best, because you're not only looking at the money as a compensation, you're also looking at your reputation on the platform.
So the platform has a lot of power in the end, actually, over the livelihood of workers. So if a platform were to decide to, well, erase your rating, for example, you had to start. You had to start anew. Yeah, and we've. Yeah. I mean, we've been often thinking about how workers could change this. And one obvious suggestion that comes to our mind is that they you know, join each other in groups. They form collective action.
Exactly.
But it seems to be a bit tricky, right, Tom?
Like, it is. It is. Sorry, it is. One of the issues that we found out is that there's competition on the platform.
Yes.
And because of that, everyone, you know, more or less exhibits, you know, self-interest. And that means then that they are not able to, you know, like put together a collective or united front.
Yes.
And that is a major problem,
yeah.
Because then the visibility, the loudness of their voices, then that doesn't come out.
Yeah.
And it's one important area that I think should be explored, how to, you know, get gig workers to, you know develop alliances that would help them to advocate and be able to engage, you know, either the platforms or the other parties,
yeah,
to the advantage.
I mean, if I think of platform workers, you know, there are so many different jobs that you could do. You become a graphic designer, you mm-hmm. could become one of these ghostwriters, you could be a data laborer, so somebody who's entering data from a sheet of paper to an Excel spreadsheet, you could be a software developer. Is it maybe that they are too different to form collective action? Is it about identity in the end, you know?
True, because again, not many of them know themselves.
Yes.
Because again, you see, gig work by its nature is not physical. So
yeah.
that's one of the problems that is making them, you know, uniting, becoming a problem.
Yeah.
But again, as you say, there are varying levels of gig work. As you mentioned it, right from rideshare, where they're just people from high school, level of education,
yeah.
Meaning that the mental or intellectual input into the work is different. And then the academic writers at that level. Then there are software developers as an example of a higher level. So you find that the issues that they're having are different at different levels.
Yeah.
And because of that, also, you know, the advocacy issues that they may be having could be different. So you're right, yes, that could be a problem.
And I remember, Bunia, that you are, there have been some attempts of forming unions among online gig workers, right? There is actually a gig worker union that has been formed. And you're on the board of this organization.
Yes, yes.
Can you tell us a bit about your work?
Yeah, there is the Online Professional Workers Association. It's an association that brought together online workers, expert online workers in Kenya. But you know, it has been difficult to have the structure in place, and that is, you know, what Prof is saying. You know, the lack of a factory, you know, where we are meeting on a day-to-day basis.
Everybody works from home.
Everybody works from home, and the aspect of computation that I'm doing transcription-related work, and my colleague there is doing. You know, graphic design.
Yeah.
The lack of where do we meet? Your interest in graphic design might be different from mine in writing. But what I see is maybe other forms of unions are coming up, and this is through social media platforms. I see groups of gig workers who are doing similar kind of jobs coming together and forming communities. Mostly not for advocacy, but for skills development, for mentorship, and for what we would call maybe, you know, on the online space where we have the policing in the online space, who is coming who, and you know, can be easily identified through those communities. So we are seeing those communities coming. We have groups on Facebook, like Transcribers. There's a group called Awesome Transcribers. You know, huge community of transcribers, and they share insights on which platforms are trending. Yeah, and they're able to share ideas and resources as well.
Are there any success stories already from them, you know, fighting for better livelihood of workers, or pushing for higher wages, for example?
I wouldn't say there is any success so far, because those groups ideally will not be fighting for the welfare of the online workers. From Upwork, that has also been a challenge, because we are still trying to, you know, become structured, and also try to see what would resonate with the online workers themselves, and what would we encourage them to, why would they want to join us? We are looking at the buying points as to why they want to they should join us in the first place. I wouldn't say there are any successes so far with such kind of unions.
Yeah. But you managed that some of them give the opportunity for workers to learn new skills. Is that right?
Yes.
Would you say that learning new skills, that skills, having marketable skills, can be a leverage for workers to improve their living conditions in the work economy?
It is. And one of the issues that we found in our research was that most of the Kenyan workers, gig workers, are high school level and below. And that means that even the complexity of the gig work that they can get engaged in a very low level.
Yeah.
That also means that their level of income is also low. It also comes in with their self-confidence, and so comes in with, you know, the ability to articulate their rights and even ask for it. So I would say that it's important that they are able to, you know, share skills and be able to build each other up, and share tips that, you know, would help them to, you know, be able to do their work even faster. But apart from that, maybe even relational stuff, soft sort of skills that come out of experience, people like experience like him, and saying that, you know, this is how to, you know, navigate, and how to tell clients who are most, you know, likely to abuse or exposed to some sort of injustice. But even issues of conflict, how do we, you know, relate with clients who are difficult?
Yes.
And what options do we have? Should we run into certain murky waters? Things like that. So in my view, I think it can serve both levels, technical skills and also soft skills.
Yeah.
But that would happen if they're able to really gel together and see that have a collective sense of where they ought to be, all of them.
Absolutely.
And see that if this gig economy ecosystem works, then it's best for all of us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I see there's still room for improvement. There's still space for collective action to grow in the interest of the workers community. But maybe besides the self-emergent regulation, how about the role of the government? Like, how about the external regulation on this? Is the Kenyan government keen on regulating this market to make living conditions more sustainable for workers? Or is it, in the end, as we often heard, about extracting taxes, extracting money from the system?
At the moment, it's difficult to tell. Of course, from what is out here, it seems it's more getting tax. And that would be unfortunate. But definitely from the initiatives that have so far been initiated.
Yeah.
That seems to be like the issue, that the government wants to get them registered for purposes of taxation. And of course, you would also see that the gig workers themselves are not being involved much, so that this is not really coming out as their agenda as well. So when the government is doing this, you know, from one direction without involving the others, it seems that it's only their agenda, and the interest of the gig workers is not there. That's what I get.
Okay, so we do see there are still many things that could be improved, but I think we are all concluding on a positive note that the online gig economy is an opportunity.
It is here in
Kenya, but only if workers manage to collaborate.
Join
collaborative action if they have the right skills, and maybe if the government at some point gets more interested in improving the working conditions, the living conditions, rather than taxing the platforms to just generate more tax.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Actually, the gig economy is, in my view, a promise. It's a very high potential of helping the government address, you know, issues of unemployment, and it's a way of creating jobs. Yeah, and what matters here, in my view, is that the ecosystem needs to work. There are issues of regulation, there are issues of infrastructure, there are issues of digital skills, and legislation. Yeah, for instance, one thing that perhaps the government could do is think of the employment. We have employment and labor court. If we could, because in the past the Kenyan government has worked on specialized issues like, say, environment. Yeah. There's an environment court. Corruption. There's an anti-corruption court. So within the context of the labor and employment court, we could have a section that is, you know, relating to gig work.
Dedicated to gig work.
Dedicated. And that, I think, is easy to do as one way of trying to, you know, build an ecosystem that supports growth in the gig economy.
Yeah, I agree. I 100%. You know, like the issue of social security among the gig workers, I think that's something that the government can really support. Through the labor courts, like Prof is saying, because you find gig workers rarely have any social security, any health insurance cover, and you know, this is something that can be institutionalized or even implemented through policy, through policy by the government.
So part of the precariousness of this work is not so much related to low levels of income. I mean, it is to a certain extent, but it's also to low levels of protection, obviously, right? Like social security and health protection.
Yeah, that's true. And that's true. In fact, I'm thinking that in the physical work spaces, for instance, minimum wages, I don't think it would be difficult perhaps to, you know, have some form of that reflected for online gig workers. They could, you know, do something about that as well. Because one of the things that we found in our research was that most of the gig workers earn between 10,000 and 30,000 Kenya shillings on a monthly basis, which again is inconsistent.
Yes.
But 10,000 to 30,000 is just about $100 to $300 a month.
Yeah.
And Nairobi is not one of the cheapest places because most of the gig workers live here.
Yeah.
And when that is the only source of income, they can hardly sustain their families. Or even if they are not having families, even themselves. Mm. And again, remember, if it is gig work, like, say, ride share in the transport sector, they have to still maintain their vehicles, buy fuel, and fuel has gone up. And insurance for their vehicles. I was reading that now insurance companies are blacklisting some of those vehicle models.
Yeah.
And those are the very vehicles that gig workers use.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the government could come in, you know, in those cases, be able to say, you know, the minimum wage is this much, and it doesn't matter whether it is online or offline.
Yeah.
And again, you know, come up with certain, you know, supportive incentives. That would help them be able to cope. Yeah.
So we see, to conclude, there is a lot of happening actually in the gig economy, both online and on site in Kenya, and particularly here in Nairobi. And but fortunately, there's also a lot going on many fronts on improving this world, but still a lot that also needs to be done, both on the worker side, on the platform side, and by the government.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you both.
Maybe just before
you end, sure, please.
Something also in mind that the gig workers are feeling, they're saying that the government has the capacity to actually enforce, develop and enforce regulation. But because of the interests, you know, they know that the government perhaps is interested in tax at all. They are saying that civil society particularly, you know, talking about unions, talking about ILO and other, have not done enough. And so, you know, these people have the capacity to be able to, you know, engage the government, lobby, advocate, and sometimes even come with funds that could, you know, support capacity development or infrastructure development. And the feeling is that not much has been done.
Yeah.
And so I think we could, you know, open conversations with Sarge so that the stakeholders are able to do much more than, you know, what gig workers individually are able to do.
I mean, this is, I couldn't conclude on this better. This is a wonderful, wonderful conclusion, Tom, because this is also one of the reasons why our project is here, as we're looking forward to having such a stakeholder dialogue tomorrow and bringing on board people from the government, from the platforms, from the worker side, and also international policy partners. And we're looking forward to that. And I'll thank you both, Tom and Bonnie, so much for this conversation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
As Professor Kwanyet stated, the focus of our work here was to bring together stakeholders from diverse domains to discuss challenges for and possibilities to improve the rights of gig workers and an inclusive platform economy in Kenya. The discussion among stakeholders confirmed some of our initial assumptions about the complexity of the Kenyan online gig economy, but also added important facets to our understanding of online mediated work in Kenya. Let me give you some insights of our findings. Firstly, many participants demand more transparency from the platforms on how work is attributed by algorithms and ask for more accountability when workers are excluded from specific gigs. But in general, interestingly, they are reluctant to call for more platform regulation. They voice the concern that an increase in regulation might also scare off platform providers and even diminish newly emerging income avenues opened by gig work. Further, a very prominent theme in our discussions was the role of women in the online gig economy. We heard multiple stories of how female freelancers are regularly discriminated against on gig working platforms, both in terms of work exclusion and via sexist attacks. To foster female participation in the gig economy and to act against systematic biases, participants called for a mentoring scheme of women by experienced female freelancers. When speaking about empowerment, our participants also agreed that skills are the single most powerful leverage for change. If gig workers have in-demand skills, their negotiation power towards the buyers and platforms increases significantly. In order to really provide steady and sustainable online job opportunities for the future, gig work needs to be classified as employment and gig workers as employees, whose rights need to be protected legally.
This podcast is part of the project Sustainability, Entrepreneurship and Global Digital Transformation, SET. Since November 2021, our project team has been developing innovative research formats and dialogue events in exchange with local actors from academia, politics, business and civil society in 8 countries worldwide. The project is funded by the Deutsche Gesellschaft für internationale Zusammenarbeit on behalf of the Federal Ministry for Economic Cooperation and Development. This podcast was edited by Marie Blümel, Christian Grauvogel, Moritz Timm and Ann-Christine Ziesemer. Scientific input by Stefan Bohn, Georg von Richthofen and Fabian Stefani. Sound and recording by Alexander Triebsees.